For 2 years, I worked in Mamas and Papas in East South Africa for nothing. A UJ lecture said in front of everyone at the lecture hall that whatever I think I'm doing, it's not going to get me anywhere. Nothing could have prepared me for the disrespects, for the being looked down upon.
Hi, Genies. Welcome to yet another episode of Access Genie, the podcast that opens doors to success in the world of entrepreneurship. Thank you so much for being here. Week in, week out, where you listen to inspirational conversations with our guests every week. Your support ensures that our podcast grows and this community grows. And if you haven't subscribed yet, what are you waiting for? You know, the more subscribers we have, it means that we can have bigger and better guests every single week. Hi, Genies. Welcome to yet another episode of Access Genie, the podcast that opens doors to success in the world of entrepreneurship. Today, oh boy, do I have a treat for you. If you love fashion, you love glam, skincare, and you just always want to look good, this episode is for you. But maybe you're a creative trying to find ways to enter into the industry and you're thinking about being a stylist or a fashion designer or any role within the fashion space, this episode is for you. And if you're somebody who just likes glam and looking fabulous, this episode is also for you. Today, I'm joined by Pupo Gumede K. We'll talk about the K a little bit later. A multi-award-winning entrepreneur, stylist, design architect, and interestingly enough, he was one of the Forbes 30 under 30 list makers in 2022. Thank you so much for joining us, Pupo.
Thank you so much for having me. It is such an honor to finally be here in this chair. I've been looking forward to this for weeks.
Listen, and as I was sitting here, I just had an aha moment of how this is sort of full circle. The first time I ever met you, I think 2019 or 18, somewhere there, and you were going to do a sit down with one of our clients. And I came to your place in Four Ways and we went to Native Chow. Do you remember?
Oh, yes, I remember that.
And you were doing a talk. And then now, many years later.
It never made it out.
This one is making it out.
This has to make it out of the WhatsApp group.
This one is making it out of the WhatsApp group. And I've been looking forward so much to having this conversation because I think sometimes when we talk about entrepreneurship, we don't include people within the fashion space and entertainment space enough, or like we should, because there's always this thought of, oh, just a stylist. I'm like, but that's business, you know? Not everything needs to be in tech or healthcare or whatever that we're used to. So I'm so excited to have this conversation with you because of that. And one thing I want to ask the most that I saw on TikTok when I was doing research a little bit. There's some people who are saying that you are successful because of your sister. If she wasn't there, you wouldn't be this young, vibrant person who's doing this. What do you have to say about that? Do you think there's anything to that?
I think two things can both coexist. I don't think I would be where I am if it wasn't for my sister. I've been able to leverage our relationship and her name into my advantage at a very young age. Hence, I got to where I am. But also, I think maybe their tone is sort of a discrediting my work and my and the passion and the work that I've put to be where I am. So I think both things kind of coexist. Yes, being related to Uayanda Ngwane did help me accelerate my career, did help me jumpstart my career. However, also the work, the passion, the drive, the sacrifices I've also had to make as Pupo Gumede.
Yeah. Also
come into play.
Yeah.
So I think both things can coexist.
Can be true. And that's so true because how many people have opportunities that they're not leveraging? And I like that you use that word leverage because most of the time we We don't see the opportunities in front of us because we're always looking outside and we're always saying, oh, start where you are, start where you are. Starting where you are is also leveraging the network and the people who are around you. Right. So how does one do that? Because that's one thing I've always struggled with. Mr. N always says to me, oh, why don't you pick up a phone? You know, so like, you know, so many people. Why don't you just pick up the phone? I'm like, hey, I don't know. Like, how do you do this? And now this is a masterclass for me. How does one leverage their network? They say your network is your net worth. But how do you actually do that? Because you could have the contacts or the sister or the family and the people around you, but you do nothing with it.
The best way to leverage your network is to also bring something to the table. If I did not have the talent or the ability or the drive, having a sister who's Iron Dangan would have been useless to me. So me being talented, me bringing something that she needs, also helped me leverage what she has. And that is how networking works. Knowing what you are bringing to the table helps you leverage opportunities much better without looking or feeling like you are leeching on the people you know or the people you are around. If people always feel like they can always count on you for something, then they will always be willing to have you around or to be around you or to lend a helping hand, you know?
Yeah.
There's a saying in dating that says, in order to be interesting, one must be interested.
Mm.
So it really just balances it out so seamlessly.
Yeah, it's a whole marriage. And I think it's this also idea that we talk about a lot today of value add in everything that you do. And from a PR perspective, it's something that I talk about with my team all the time. Even when you're doing posts or whatever, it's not time for doing call to actions anymore. It's a time to do a call to value. What value are you bringing? You want somebody to click on that link. What value is in the link that they'll get? Are they going to be entertained? Are they going to get a free masterclass? What's the value? So you're really correct when you're talking about you have to have something to offer and something of value to give to the next person. But let's double back a little bit to where it all began. I know that you've been in the fashion or you loved fashion from the time when you were young. I read somewhere that from when you were about 3 years old,
yes,
you're already a fashionista. Take me back then. What were you doing that got people to say, oh, this one, they're Tandy fashion, oh, back then as a child?
So I come from a home that has so many women. My grandmother, my grandmother's sisters, my mom, my aunts, my sisters. And when you come from a home that is so filled with women, dressing up, looking good, looking polished, hair, makeup is something that is so close to you, but it's something that you see at a very close lens every single day. My mom is going to work, she's picking up an outfit every single day. My sister is going to varsity, she's like, oh, which jacket goes with this outfit? So that really made me fall in love with clothing and the entire experience that goes around clothing. And it really propelled my love for what would later be fashion. So at that time, I just thought it was love for looking good, looking well put together. You know, my mom was such a lady. She was always well put together. She was always well, like, put together. And she even instilled the same qualities down to my sisters. You know, my sisters are always well put together. You'll never see them. Even when Ayanda's going to buy bread at the mall, she's in heels. My sister Lerato is always well put together. Hair, nails, everything is always like, you know, how it should be. Yeah. So that is when I also discovered my love for clothing. And I just later got exposed to the world of fashion when I was around 10, 11, watching shows like Fashion TV, watching the Fashion Police, and discovering that there's actually a world of fashion where what plays in my head actually is in reality. Like, people live for fashion, the events, the parties, the red carpets, the glitz, the glam. There's actually an entire world of that exists.
Yeah. And you loved it so much that at just 13 years old, you sketched an outfit that you give to Ayanda to go away at some event. And I understand she won Best Dressed.
Yeah, it was the Summers, yeah, South African Music Awards.
Imagine, so at 13.
At 13. So I'd been trying to get my sister to wear something that I designed from age 11. And I remember I had this book where I just had lots and lots and lots of designs. And I even had a magazine. I remember I had a magazine when I was 12. A fashion magazine that I wrote handwritten myself.
Yeah.
And I remember then one of the many tons of sketches that I'd given her, I saw her wearing on the red carpet. And I was like, oh.
That's my sketch.
It's my thing. And, you know, winning Best Dress is like, I always say to people, winning my Best Dress at 13 and now being here years later, it takes a lot of years to become an overnight success. Mm. I wish people knew that. I wish people didn't feel like, oh, Pupo, you are here. 2 years later, you just blew up.
Didn't take 2 years.
Oh, it did. It did not take two years. It takes a lot of years to become an overnight success.
Absolutely. And then you did it again when you were 16 at another award show where she did something similar.
Yes. I think the Summers again. Yeah. Yeah, it was the Summers. I got my second Best Dress. I think at that point, I was, because now I just started getting into the industry, just started my first job at Romeo and Jean, and I'd moved to Joburg, quit Varsity in Durban, moved to Joburg, and I remember on the red carpet, Khosi, Lesego Khosi, love him to bits, he comes to me, they were doing a show for SABC 1, like a sort of a Fashion Police thing. And it comes to me like, you were my Best Dress. He says that, this is my Best Dress. He pointed Anders' outfit. You killed it. I was like, what? Yeah, he's like, I just spoke about on national television. You're my Best Dress. I said, what?
Like,
I was like, because now I understood what the industry is. And I understood what that means. You know, the South African Music Awards were like the Olympics of South African fashion, where every designer send someone on that red carpet. So winning a Best Dress day means in a room full of fashion greats, I still came up on top.
Yeah. Let's double back a little bit, because just thinking about you as a 10-year-old loving fashion at 13, sketching something that actually turns out into a beautiful dress and doing it again a few years later means that you had to have a big shift in mindset, or your mindset had to be developed to believe that you can do it and that the work is good enough. You don't find a lot of teenagers, even today, who are able to have such conviction. Where do you think that conviction for you comes from?
Delusion.
Okay. I mean, sometimes it is the solution, isn't it?
It really is the solution, because I live a lot in my mind, but I also live outside a normal person's mind. When I speak about my dreams or what I want to do or whatever, it always sounds like, are you okay?
Yeah.
You know, is it crack that you smoke? But in my mind, it always makes sense. So I would say, versus an average, at every age, my mind has always been more developed versus an average human's mind at that age. And I'll tell you, because my mom always spoke about how when she took me to the clinic at 6 months, they used to shout at her because they thought she was forcing me to stand, because I could stand at that time. And I could talk less than a year in. I could stand and walk less than a year in. Like so many instances where comparing to a normal person's or my normal age mate's mind, mine had always been more developed. So it was very normal for me as a teenager to still want or to still be able to do such things, because in my mind it made so much sense.
Yeah.
I always used to say I never dated in high school because I always just used to look at everyone as kids. Well, I remember we used to have these shows, these local shows every weekend where everyone would get excited to go. And during the weekend, all the cool kids would go. And I never used to get excited by that, because every weekend I used to figure out a way, how am I going to get myself on an RGB interview, or it's the summers coming this weekend, what am I doing that is going to get me there? Or it's the metros this weekend, or it's the Drive in July, you know. So at any given time, my mind had always been more developed and wanting more than an average human at that certain age.
Yeah. And what is it about the family environment that allowed that to grow and foster that? Because in certain instances in families, when you see like a kid is like that, like, hi, wena, go do work, go do schoolwork, oh, wenzani, kawyeke, and all of those kind of things that then make you sort of shrink yourself instead of being so creative about what life can be.
I come from a family of people who went against the norms. Like in my family, I don't think we have any graduates. Everyone is either in the arts or in the business sector, but everyone is in the business of doing it themselves and non-conventionally doing it themselves. So growing up, looking at how, I mean, my brother owns a wax museum. He owns Africa's first wax museum. He makes lifestyle statues. My sister owns a communications and production label for many years, and has been in the best-selling lists for a couple of years. So growing up, looking at that and looking, that was my reality. So I did not have the pressure of a normal child or an average child to say, you must go to school because your elder sister went to school and graduated, or your older brother is doing something within the academic space. Yeah. I've always looked up to my siblings who went into the space of their talents or their creativity, and they made a living and they mastered that. Mm. So that has always been a good motivator for me.
Yeah. Take me back to that moment in Durban at university, supposed to be studying, and then you're like, you know what? Mina, dear God, I'm leaving.
I actually came to Joburg because it was my sister's birthday. And I decided I don't want to go back. I was supposed to come for the weekend. And I was like, yeah, no, I'm done. I woke up on a Monday. I was supposed to fly back. And I said, I actually can't do this anymore.
What is it that you were feeling at the time and your emotions at the time that made you say, not anymore, I'm not doing this?
I think for myself or any other creative, your love for fashion is few. The more you are in fashion or having conversation around fashion or being or looking at fashion or touching, like your proximity to fashion refuels your love for fashion every time. And when I did my Bachelor of Science in Biological Science in Durban, I did not have the time to be in proximity to fashion. I did not have the time to keep up on the trends, keep up with the latest red carpets, keep up with the latest fashion shows. I was just so consumed with everything that I was doing that I felt like I was not living, but I was just existing. And that sucked the life out of me. I did not have the time to do what I actually love. And when I came to Joburg for my sister's birthday, and we were just putting together her outfits, and like, oh, actually, no, this is what I want to do. I'm sorry. Yeah.
And how did she take it when you're like, nah, I'm here to stay. We need to figure this out.
So I told my mom later in the week, because my mom was like, you're not going back to school because you've been here for a week. Mm. I was like, yeah, I decided to deregister. And then she was like, I think my mom was so worried, you know. And then she called a family meeting. They spoke about it. Luckily, my siblings had already have succeeded in the fields that they are in. So they were able to convince her to be like, hey, you know, it's not far-fetched for someone in this family to wanna go into a career in arts.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine though the anxiety at the time. Were you anxious at all? Like, is this the right decision? Am I going to make it, or have I totally lost my mind? Is there like any sort of doubt that was creeping in?
Oh, it was clocking me. It was skyrocketing. Naturally, I do suffer from anxiety. So making big decisions is so tough when you suffer from anxiety. And I'm a person who knows that the consequences of my actions lie with me. I'm not someone who shifts blame. So can you imagine how hard that was, knowing that, oh, if this does not work out, it's completely on me. I remember my best friend asking me, it's like, are you sure? Because my best friend comes from a family of, everyone in their family is a graduate. And I was doing the same degree. And he's like, are you sure you know what you're doing? Are you like, and I think it maybe in his head, he might have thought, I just want to come to Joburg and be swallowed by the life of the glitz and glam. And, you know, he just didn't think I could make a career out of, he just didn't know what was playing in my mind. He thought I just want to go to Joburg and just be a socialite. And it's like, are you sure you know what you're doing? And it's like, I don't know, maybe stop talking to me like that.
Yeah. And I think also that anxiety would come with, there isn't a lot of super successful stylists per se that we know and have seen, at least for me, a normal person in day-to-day, where I could go and say, oh, the stylist, and they did this, and they made this. And, you know, there's designers here and there, you can see the work. But even with the designers, you're like, yeah, are you sure? So I think it's because we don't have enough representation, which is why I think what you're doing is so critical and why I wanted you to be able to sit here, because we shouldn't be thinking that there's no possibilities with such careers. There are possibilities. We just need champions to come and show us how it can all be done. And you are daring. I think that's the word I would use. You are daring to say, I've not seen it at this level, luckily, but I'm going to do it anyway.
And I had not even seen it, hey?
Yeah.
Like, I had never met a stylist when I decided to be one.
Yeah. So who are your role models in the space at the time, in terms of like, okay, there is a career that's called styling. Those are the people who are doing it. And this is sort of the formula maybe that I can follow or see.
I don't think there were any for me that were visible. I just looked up to fashion designers. And so how I got into styling was, I was doing my Bachelor of Arts in fashion at the University of Johannesburg, my first year. And I decided, I got the opportunity to do Mamas and Papas and Essays of Africa as their stylist and creative director. So the reason why I took that gig was I wanted to have a foot in the industry. So by the time I finished my degree, I already have a foot in the industry. But I didn't know that a foot in the industry would mean all of this that has come up with the foot.
Yeah. Yeah. So and that, what is that first experience like, and like the first set, and like, okay, I need to make this cover pop and make the, you know, mamas and papas and stuff, it's pregnant ladies, and, you know, they're tired sometimes and they don't feel it, or they don't feel beautiful, especially if you're like far long enough.
I really, when it comes to my work, I'm a people pleaser. Not just the work, I'll do everything around it to make, to please you. And that was a very good quality when it came into me doing the work around mamas and papas, and because it was so scary, but I knew that the only thing I have to do is please this person. Like, one day at a time means I just need to make sure that at the end of the day, this person is happy.
Mm.
And I took it one day at a time, one set at a time. I used to skip school like four times a month, because I needed to have a sourcing day and a shoot day for my mamas and papas, a sourcing day and a shoot day for ACS of Africa. And I remember my lecturer used to be so mad at me, because I never used to have a reason for skipping school. Like, you can only have as many doctor's letters as possible. I mean, every month.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it was so hard balancing being a first year student in a new city and this job that I wanna give my all to. And unfortunately, but what I learned during that time is, in order to get what others are not having, you have to do what others are not doing.
Mm.
I mean, it was the most difficult thing, but I had to do it, because I used to tell myself, I still tell myself this, no one wants this life more than me. So I had to.
Yeah. How did the Mamas and Papas in Essays of Africa gig come about?
So I was styling Ayanda for a spread of Essays of Africa. And because we were so late to the shoot, so they called me and asked me to style it, because I used to curate her wardrobe and she would post about it on Instagram. And then on the set, it was just me and her and the photographer. And the photographer saw like my visions, and how I'd say, okay, maybe if we shoot it like this, like this, like this, and we elevate it, we make it so editorial. So, and then Gareth Jacobs, I would always be grateful to Gareth Jacobs. He's the man that handed me my career. And a month later, I get a call from him. He's like, would you be keen to do? So he was the resident photographer for Mamas and Papas. Like, yeah, I have this opportunity. Would you be keen to do it? I saw you in action and I've just never seen anything like that. And I was like, yeah, sure, I would love to. And he's like, yeah, but they just don't have a budget. So you'd have to like not work for, we'd have to like do the work for nothing. I was like, yeah, sure, I want it. And I'm like, no one wants this life more than me. Yeah. So I'll do it. Yeah. And you know, he made it happen. So that is how I got the gig for Mamas and Papas. Yeah.
And that's such a beautiful lesson, because people say, hey, I'll not do anything for free. That's my time, my talent, my whatever. And I think it's such a big lesson in saying, go prove yourself and build your portfolio, and the money will always follow. It's not about what you're giving to the company. It's about what you are getting out for your own career, for your own brand, and for your own growth. You know, I get even a lot of interns who are even in, you know, at university, and then they need credits to graduate and they need work experience. And then when they're writing, yeah, but I'll require a minimum of 4,000 rand because I'll be adding value to the company. I'm like, I don't need you. I do not have a position. I'm like, I need to teach you to sign your reports every week, to update your lecturers about how it's going. And I'm actually doing work. I'm actually doing work, and I don't have a position. And if I had a position, I'd give you and offer you what I want, not, you know, also you telling me you want a minimum of 4,000 because you're going to be adding value. So
also, you would Also, if you had the 4,000 rand per month, you'd hire someone who'd actually add the value.
We'll add value.
How about that? Yeah, I really do think that is, I don't like promoting working for nothing because it's also a problematic chat when it comes to exploitation, especially in our industry. Mm-hmm. But I chose to, for two years, I worked in Mamas and Papas in East Central Africa for nothing, for 2 years. And because, number one, no one wanted that life more than me. Number two, I always say, I say to my assistant, always make sure you're getting paid, but sometimes the payment is not going to be money, but always make sure you're getting paid. Yeah. Because I got paid at Mamas and Papas in East of Africa. It was not the money. I didn't get paid by money, but I got paid by experience, the contacts, the lessons of how to run being a stylist for a magazine cover. What are the do's and don'ts? How do you approach styling? How do you approach dealing with celebrities? How do I built a network of all those people? But also, I got on the other side with a record of having styled 21 magazine covers with before the age of 21. I would have never done that if I said to Quinta Media, yeah, but this is my daily rate. So if you really want me, you're going to have to pay me this much. I made sure that what I decided what it was payment for me.
Yeah, yeah. So true. And that's really critical. And I love that when you say you chose it for yourself. And when you look at most successful people in the world, I don't care where, you'll find that they've done stuff for free at the beginning and early on. You can pick a person. Most of the people have.
Yeah.
And I found that same thing in my career in journalism as well. I worked for 4 years, from first year at UJ to my honors years. For 4 years, I was working for different, all of those Auckland Park publications, radio stations, BBC. Every day, people were going home for the holidays. And they're working for Mahala. I remember, you know, BBC what? Even got to a point, they're like, here's 2,000 rand a month stipend in an envelope, because girl...
You know, it's because no one wanted that life more than you.
Nobody wanted it more than me. And by the time I graduated, I had 4 years worth of experience. I've never applied for a job ever in my life, because now I'm being pulled and headhunted left, right, and center, whether it's Forbes or BBC, or I've never had to try and look for the work, because now by the time we're graduating, I'm here. All of my other peers are now trying to get internships. No, I can't be an intern no more.
Yeah, because you've already paid your dues. I also never had to look for work.
Yeah.
When I dropped out at UJ.
Yeah.
And now the people who've graduated hit me up looking for work, and like people I used to go to school with, looking for work and looking for plugs and what can they do to accelerate their brands,
yeah.
You know, because I did what no one was willing to do because I wanted what no one had.
Yeah. Be willing to do what nobody else wants to do. If there's anything you take away from this conversation, is that Pupu said, be willing to do what others are not willing to do, because the life you want, you're the one who wants it more than anything else in the world. So you got to do it. And I think that's really critical. So now you got into the industry. And who could be, because you're dealing with styling, it means you're dealing with stars and celebrities and influencers, and it's glitz, glam, lights, etc. What was getting into the industry like for you? Was it like what you expected it to be beforehand?
No, nothing could have prepared me for that.
Yeah.
Nothing could have prepared me for that, because I always thought it's the glitz, the glam, and the, oh, love the stress. Nothing could have prepared me for the disrespect, for the being looked down upon, from the, just the, I think mainly the disrespect. Nothing could have prepared me for the disrespect that comes with being in the industry. I remember my first gig, it was ACS of Africa, and I sent a sourcing request to this designer. Designer I had a relationship with, because they knew me from when I was young, and they say, Ashap, I can come source. When I get there, they make me wait like 4 hours outside of their house. And after I've waited for 4 hours outside of their house, I get inside. They had the chat with me. And the chat was them telling me how, as someone who knows me and knows how I am, they just don't think this industry is for me. And they just don't think I'm making the right decision. And as a pickup brother, they're just telling me to leave now while I can, because I just will not, my personality will not survive in this industry. And.
And how did you take that?
I said, oh, okay, but can I have the dress though?
Yeah.
Because I'm here for the dress. So yeah. Thank you for the pep talk, but I'm here for the dress. Since I was young, people have always felt comfortable telling me what I can or cannot do. I make the speech every year on my birthday. My mom always used to tell me that when she was pregnant with me, because she got pregnant at like 40, 42 or 43. And at that time, you know, like the 40 was like the benchmark for a woman to be pregnant. And she always used to tell me that when she found out she was pregnant with me, her doctor said, you need to terminate this pregnancy because you will not carry to full term. And then when she carried to full term, and the doctor was like, yeah, but unfortunately, you will not have a child that lives up to being an adult. And funny enough, now I'm here because I was apparently not supposed to live after two or whatever. And luckily, I'm here now. So that has been a reoccurring pattern in my life, from even being in school to being even in varsity. My UJ lecturer said in front of everyone at the lecture hall that whatever I think I'm doing, it's not going to get me anywhere. I think I'd missed the class. And she's like, yeah, whatever you think you're doing is not going to get you anywhere. You think you're better than other people. That's why you're skipping school, you know. So my existence is proving people wrong. And I've just come to understand it. It still happens to this day. So I've come to understand that my existence is proving people wrong. So the theme of people telling me that I cannot do things or that I don't deserve things will always be a recurring theme in my life. And my calling is just to keep on proving people wrong. And that is one of them. That was one of the situations. I saw it like that. Yeah. I saw it as like, oh, it's one of those. Anyway, I don't take things so hard as a person. I look at things from a very, I use my mind more than my heart. So I was like, hey, that is his opinion. Anyway, I will have the dress. Thank you. And then I will go style my cover. It was Dineo Moeketsi on the cover of Essence of Africa in a very gorgeous pink tulle garment. I was obsessed. I was obsessed. She was obsessed. The editors were obsessed. Everyone was gagged. The photographer was gagged.
Yeah. And how do you then channel the negativity in such a way that you shift the conversation to say, I'm going to prove you wrong. This is what I'm doing anyway. What inner work happens? Because I'd assume that it does hurt sometimes, especially if it's coming from somebody you've known, you trust, you think, you know, they believe in you, and then boom, a jab like that happens.
This is probably toxic, but I find a bit of satisfaction from proving people wrong.
Yeah.
Like this tickles an itch. Like, no, I could wait years to prove you wrong. I don't mind.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I do not mind waiting years to get my lick back.
Yeah.
So there's an itch it scratches. And yes, when it happens, it just also depends where I am at, mentally and emotionally. If it finds me at a place where I'm just, oh, damn, that hit hard. Didn't think that someone would have the audacity to walk up to me and say, you are not the person you think you are. Newsflash, buddy, you know? And I mean, I recently had one of those recently when someone did an entire Instagram story rant about me. And they're like, yeah, his Pupa is actually not a good stylist. He is just good with PR. He chose the wrong career. I should have just been a publicist rather than being a stylist, because he's terrible as a stylist. And I looked at it and I kept it moving. Did not even answer. Like, I watched the story, kept it moving. And then today I just got news that I'm nominated again at the BTS Awards as Stylist of the Year.
Yay! And congrats.
Thank you. And over the past weekend, I had an article written about me in Nigeria, about the work I did on Young, Famous, and African. And I said to my close friends, well, looks like I am good in PR and good as a stylist.
Yeah.
So now what?
Yeah.
Maybe you should take notes from me. Yeah. No.
True.
So it is a reoccurring thing. And it's just something, you know, acceptance is very important as a human being.
Yeah.
We spend so much time trying to defy things rather than just seeing them as they are. Just knowing that people are always going to feel like I don't deserve the things that I deserve. And that is just okay.
But is it okay, or is like the why they think that and the audacity of them to even say it out loud? Or what is it about you that makes them think they can even say those things out loud?
It's something that at some point I really... it really stung, but now it's sort of it's just the things that come with being Pupo. Because even at, no matter how big the platform, think of the biggest platform I've worked in, the biggest channel I've worked in, or the biggest publication, they ask that. But think of the biggest project I've been involved in. People in Netflix were like, why is he the HOD? Why are we paying this boy so much money to just be a stylist? Like, my worth has constantly been something that's been questioned in my line of work. And if I entertain it every time it comes up, so let me just accept it as just one of the things that come with being me.
Yeah.
And there's so much peace in knowing that, oh, this is one of the things that come with being me, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I think it also goes to this big philosophy that worry and care a lot about the things that are in your circle of influence and the things that you can control. So I don't think it's toxic. I think it's a good trait to have in dealing with situations, because you can't control what I think about you. You can't control how I feel or react. You can't control that.
Right.
All you can do is control the things that are literally within your circle of influence. And as we were talking about the Instagram rant, I remembered seeing something, I think it was on Twitter as well, somebody who said, if I were a celebrity, I wouldn't want to be dressed by a Pupo, because he wants to be the celebrity and not work behind the scenes. Stylists must be work behind the scenes. And I'm like, and how do you expect somebody to grow? Because the way in which I see it is, we're all given opportunities and platforms to elevate ourselves as we elevate others. There's nothing wrong with that. So as long as I'm doing my job, I'll elevate. And I've seen other people say the same thing about other girlies in PR. Like, oh, you know, somebody calls me, oh, could you help me with my PR? And I'm like, ah, I don't do celebrity PR. And then I try to refer, because I don't do celebrity PR. No, she wants to be the celebrity, so I can't. I'm like, what does that even mean, that the PR founder wants to be the celebrity? She's promoting her business. Of course she has to do media interviews. Of course she has to go to award shows. Of course, like, every business under the sun does that. When the CEO of Discovery does interviews, do you say, oh,
he's trying to be the one
he's trying to be the famous person? Or you don't say that, because that comes with the job. That's the job of a CEO, to promote the business and what the business does. So when I see those kind of things, I realize how much also our
Or tweets thinking. Like, I saw a tweet about myself. Yeah. someone said, oh, this one really thinks he's the best thing to ever happen to South African
fashion. I've seen that one so many times and I'm like, and he is. I saw that one when you were wearing this blue garment.
Oh yeah, from the Durban July.
Yes, and that's when I saw that one. I'm like, of course, like, look at that. And it was a beautiful piece.
Thank you. There is a Japanese saying that says, a nail that sticks out the most attracts the hammer.
Yeah.
And it just is.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, the nail that really sticks out the most attracts the hammer. So you really need to decide that, do I want to be the nail that sticks out the most, or do I want to be the nail that sticks out the least?
Yeah.
And the consequences of both are being the nail that sticks out the most attracts the hammer, being the nail that sticks out the least does not attract the hammer, but no one pays attention to it.
Yeah.
So it just is one of those life things that you have to be like, oh, well.
And anyway, every person who ever makes it to top 1% or 10% in the world or in careers or fields, they don't hide under their shadows. They make it known. Even when you're working in corporate, the people who get promoted are the ones who speak up. They might not, sometimes they don't even know how to do the job properly, but they're confident and they speak up and they show up and they ensure that they're heard and they become leaders in those spaces. And I always say that even some of the people who we see as the top, this and top that, it doesn't mean they're the most talented people ever in the world. It's because they are doing what others are not doing, you know, putting themselves out there more than what others are doing. And we shouldn't be shy to do that. I think our African culture, though, raises us to shrink ourselves. I think the problem comes from that. The moment you see ngathi umuntu, it's like, yo, why are you like that? Yet in other cultures, it's seen as confidence and it's celebrated and it's encouraged. Like, he and I even look at each other in the eyes. I would get hit as a child if I looked an adult in the eye. Like, why are you looking an adult in the eye? You have to like look down. And so all of those things that we find in our culture sometimes limits us and limits how we then end up showing up in the world. Where it took me years to learn to look at someone in the eye and like, yeah, I'm talking to you, let's do it. It took years of unlearning, especially when it's adults. And I think some of those things that get taught to us, and those things were taught to us because if you think about it, we're coming from an era of colonization. You couldn't look a white person or a person of authority in the eye. And then it was brought home because the person of authority, so you cannot look them in the eye. So like if only we could realize how much colonization really impacted us, not just from a race level or from a financial level, even from a behavioral level. It would be really interesting if we took that stock and understood why we do things we do and why we do those things, which is very interesting. What has your worst day in business and in fashion been, where you look at it like, yo, that day was horrendous?
I was doing, I have a lot.
Yeah.
Every day I'm fighting for my life, but the one day where I was just like, oh my God, this might be the end of my career. I approached a couple of public figures to style them for the DSTV, Viewer's Choice Awards. And, I contracted a very talented young boy to make the garment. So I presented the garments, the original sketches, to the stars. They approved them, and then I went back and I was like, okay. And then this is what we're making. He's like, yeah, we're approved. The day before the event, 2 days before the event, I could not find him on the phone. And I'd scheduled fittings. We're talking about four people here. Scheduled fittings. He's not where to be found. I don't know what to say to the client, the stars. And the following day, he reaches out to me. He's like, yeah, don't worry. And I'm like, what do you mean, don't worry? And he finally shows up. We do the fittings. The dress are just not what I proposed initially. And luckily, I was able to make a couple of phone calls and get like alternative dresses. But for me, I was like, this might be the end of my career. Yeah. I mean, I did have a good moment. I did have a good moment at the awards. I dressed Malinkosi, Ayanda Tabete, and Kwenzo Ngobo. Had a good moment, all were on the best dress list, but I just would have loved to have that good moment without having to cry 1,000 times before. So I've had a couple of those moments. Some of them obviously I can't speak on because they were I signed NDAs. It's so weird, people make you sign NDAs so that they can mistreat you.
That happens. Yeah,
so I've had a couple of those, a lot of those. My job emotionally exhausts me. Dealing with people is not the most pleasant thing. That's what I've learned from the downside of my job.
Yeah. And I don't do celebrity PR because it's just draining. I'm like, this is not worth my time or energy. So I just want entrepreneurs because these people are CEOs and running businesses. It's not as divery. I don't even know if that's a word.
And I'm at that moment right now. Yeah. I'm also at that point.
Where you're like, nah.
Yeah, since I've started taking on private clients, I've been much happier and much at peace and much more liberty to do my work with excitement than when I still did like celebrity styling full on.
Yeah. When did you come to that realization, like, I need to diversify my business and not really only focus on celebrities?
Earlier this year.
Yeah.
Where I was like, what? I can't, like, there's nothing here for me. Like, I looked at this, I was doing a Mail and Guardian interview, and they asked me, who else do I still want to style in South Africa? And I said, no one. Like, I don't have any more person that I can be like, oh, I'm so hungry for that person. I'm happy with everyone I've worked with, happy with all the fashion moments I've created. And now I just want to do something that is much easier and more impactful, meaningful. Because when you do private clients, that is more meaningful because if you, like, a celebrity will have, 16 red carpets in a year. Mm-hmm. Your one look is maybe not as impactful in their lives as you think you are. But right now I'm working on, I'm styling someone's 40th birthday, and I can feel that this moment is so precious to this person's life, and them wanting to share it with me is something that is so fulfilling, you know? Like, it's like regaining your purpose. That, I get to be a part of someone's special day and I get to be responsible for how it comes out.
Yeah.
Instead of just being a passerby. In the crowd when dealing with celebrity styling. Yeah.
Take me to one moment where you did something and somebody was like so grateful that you looked there and you're like, the work I'm doing is so impactful and so beautiful because of how they're overtaken by emotion or how much they loved the work.
I've had a lot of moments where someone is grateful in the moment. And, but that's just in the moment. I would say last year I had the honor of styling the Queen of Eswatini for her maternity shoots. She was such a, number one, such a pleasure to work with. But also, number two, the gratitude she had towards me and towards the work and the respect she had towards the work and towards the artist was so mind-blowing to say someone of certain stature, number one, is being so grateful for the work that you have presented, but also you are a part of someone's big moment. Mm. It's sort of like styling a wedding.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I looked back and I looked at the setting and everything. I was like, oh, wow. I really am part of someone's big moment, and they actually show it. Which, I've been part of people's big moments, but it has always been not shown by the person receiving it. But I sat there and I was like, oh my God. Because I look at my each and every client that I style as me writing a love letter to them. Because no matter who you are, I will always, no matter how much you're paying me, I will always go beyond what you're paying me for.
Mm.
Like, if you book me for a gig, just know, you might not be aware because I will not tell you, but just know that I went above what you paid me for. So I was like, oh my God, this love letter is well received.
The love letter is well received. That's so beautiful. And I think sometimes we miss that no matter who you are in the world, there's one thing all of us are craving. It's like true connection. You can be a billionaire or somebody who is mid class or lower class, whatever. We're all craving to be seen, to be heard, and to have like true, authentic connections. That's why they say that you'll never forget how people make you feel. So maybe she stood up for you because of how she made you feel during that time. Like, oh, that was such a beautiful experience because she saw you, and it wasn't just like you know, something that can be rush. What's your approach to styling someone? Say, for example, if you were to style me, I'm giving myself as a case study for you guys. See, the work I do for you guys. What's your approach to styling someone? So if you're to get me, for example, as a client, and I'm like, it's not for a particular event, but it's just for my look. I want to have a certain style and feel about me and my brand. How would you approach that?
So we would have to have a consultation with you and figure out what is it that you want to say. What is the statement that you want to say? And if, let's say, you got a new job as the CEO of a multi-million dollar company, and now you want a wardrobe that matches, then we sit down, we're like, what do you want to say? You're like, yeah, Popo, I want to say, respect me. And then we're like, okay, so what? And I ask you, obviously, invasive questions about you, like, how old are you? Are you married? Are you unmarried? Are you, what is your dating vibe? Do you have kids? No kids? Where do you live? Like, all those factors come into play. And then I'll obviously be like, what do you like? What do you like doing on your spare time? What kind, like, sort of trying to get you, try to get inside you and see who you are so that we can say that. And then we figure out your body shape, your body size, what are you comfortable showing, what are you not comfortable showing. If you have a tattoo on your thigh that you don't want to see, so obviously, a stylist comes up with solutions. So you basically bring all your problems to me and I come up with all the solutions. So your profile is basically all your problems. Oh, Popo, I am married. I know marriage is not a problem, but here it's a problem because as someone who's married, I need to come with a solution for a married person. By solution, I mean a wardrobe that is fit for a married person. Use that. Oh, Popo, I have a tattoo on my thigh. I need to come up with a counter solution for that. Oh, Popo, I don't like wearing black. I need to come up with a counter solution for this. So before we even get to the wardrobe, I am solving all your problems, and then I'll create a mood board for you, and then I'll do your shopping. We do try-ons, we do alterations, and then we give it a try.
Yeah.
So say, okay, now go into the world and see if what you wanted to say, is this matching it? Mm. And then we have a try. If you're happy with it, then we just continue from there. Maybe you want to then build up your wardrobe with more pieces, then I can shop for you monthly. Or you have events now and you still want the same stylist to put together your wardrobe to be the one to put you together for events, then you like shop.
Yeah. For those who don't know, what does a stylist really do? Over and above the consultation and stuff that we've spoken about, what does the rest of that process look like?
A stylist solves your wardrobe problems. So it's either you have to go to an event and you don't know what to do, you get a stylist. You're going to a meeting, you don't know what to do, what to wear, you get a stylist. So every wardrobe-related problem, a stylist will solve it for you.
Yeah.
You want to source these shoes, a stylist will source it for you.
So you also do shopping.
Yeah.
And tryouts and all of that.
Yes.
That's absolutely interesting. And how do you ensure that now you keep it fresh? Because say, for example, if you're working with celebrities that are all going to the same event, we've got a limited number of designers in the country. And also talking about designers, I'm not into fashion and what, but when I look at events, like to me, everybody looks like the same. Everyone is wearing the same clothes, same dresses. They literally all look the same. Or you can pick like, this person wore something exactly like this last year, the year before, and the year before. So how do you keep it fresh so that your clients also feel like everything is new and different?
As a stylist, you find it within yourself. Now that's where the talent of a person comes in. Because a designer stays true to their aesthetic. That's what I always say. A designer will stay true to their aesthetic because that's who you are. Now, that is why you need a stylist. Because a stylist will solve your wardrobe problems. If you decide to go to David Lale and get a David Lale ready to wear at a Miss South Africa finale, that is not David Lale's problem. The designer's duty is to make the garments and inspired by their own aesthetic. And as a stylist, you decide what designer to go with based on what is it that you want to say. Do you get me?
Yeah, I get you. But I find that in South Africa, if I'm to compare with Nigeria, for example, guys, those girlies can dress. I've got a few things that I've ordered out of Nigeria because their designers are like, to me, or maybe it's my style, I don't know, but it's like their designers are like popping new things. The hands are doing this like, it drama. I saw all of Bonang's dresses were also by Nigerians.
Yes, yes.
How do we awaken this industry in our country? Because we've got the most beautiful women, beautiful bodies, we've got events, we've got all of this. But I feel like there's something that's missing when it comes to dressing from a spectator. When I look and I compare with what we're seeing happening in Nigeria, for example.
We all push each other to push the boundaries. I think that's one of the main reasons why I came up with the F word. My YouTube channel where I critique red carpet fashion, celebrity red carpet fashion. We need to push each other to do better as an industry. We need to say, hey, this is great, but we can do better. We can push each other to break boundaries, do this, because we can. We do have creative stylists who are creative or designers who are creative, but it's everyone needs to come together to play.
Yeah.
You know, every single person needs to come to the party.
Yeah. How's the F word been received by the people you critique?
It's tricky. So some are, no, mostly they understand why it exists and why it's there. And they appreciate the art of something like that. Some that I've critiqued be like, yeah, no, but you were right, you know. You were right about that critique, because I'm not just saying things out of my ass, but like I get technical. As someone who's in fashion, I'm technical about things. I'm like, oh, that arm is wrong. The placement of that button is wrong. And when I talk about it, people do see it. And I was like, oh, actually, Pupo, you are right. It's just been a few cases where people are so attached to their outfits that they feel like they need to defend them. And it's always funny to me, because if you actually so attached to your image and how you look, maybe you'd put more effort to it. No. Maybe if you take your image so personally, maybe you put more pre-efforts to it to make sure it comes out looking well instead of putting post-efforts. It's like I know with my sister Ayanda or for example, someone like Bonang. Bonang puts in pre-efforts to how she looks. You don't then put in the efforts after it has went out there. If you take it seriously, you must take it seriously from the start.
Yeah. Who do you think is the best dressed person in South Africa? Celebrity, of course. Give me top three.
Bonang. She knows how to turn. Bonang makes everything look good. I don't know if I'm being biased, but I think maybe
go on.
I think Ayanda Ngwane really makes clothes look great.
Yeah. I've seen her in one of my clients' clothes, Hold Africa. She always looks so damn good.
Right.
Hold Africa pieces. Go buy Hold Africa.
Right.
Yeah.
I think also because she has a stylist, then she's able to consistently look good.
Yeah.
And then who else do I feel like really turns heads? Linda Mdoba always looks amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Linda Mdoba really always turns a look.
Yeah. And three worst dressed that people would need help, like, girl, oh boy, Sinenkingala.
This is tricky. I don't think, can I play the fifth?
Well, you can, but you don't have to.
I need to play the fifth.
Okay.
The life is long, the industry is long.
True. That's smart. And in you trying to bring fashion also to everyday people like myself, you have collaborated in an amazing partnership, Rent a Dress, where we can get those fabulous dresses and bring them back. And what I absolutely love about Rent a Dress is that fashion is, do you know fashion is the number one polluter in the world? And yet we're promoting so much of fast fashion and forgetting that there's different ways in which we can make our clothes go a long way.
So Rent a Dress is my baby with my co-founder. It is a fashion and sustainability business. You can find it at www.rentadress.co.za. You can just rent out a dress and have it couriered to you, wear it, bring it back to us, we'll clean it, and yeah. And one of the reasons why I went into that business is it tackles two big issues in the world right now. It tackles the issue of over-consumerism. There's so many economic problems that a business like Rent a Dress makes so much sense, where you can just rent out a high quality, high value, high fashion garment handpicked by me, and you get to look your best at a budget, and you don't have to worry about, because with also the thing about these dresses that you wear it once it's on Instagram, you can't wear it again, you know. So we're solving the issue of over-consumerism, but also sustainability. As you did say, fashion is the biggest polluter in the world, especially in an era where fast fashion is growing exponentially, in an era where ever again is growing, because once you post it on Instagram, it's no longer relevant. So it makes so much sense that businesses like this pop out in an era where they are needed.
And how has it been received by the public?
People have been so supportive. However, we just still are in a bit of a tussle with the public when it comes to the model, the business model, because people want to try on and we don't allow try-ons, because, I mean, if you come and you try on five dresses, then that means we need to have the four dresses you did not pick go to the dry cleaner. And while they're at the dry cleaner, that means they can't be rented for the days that they're at the dry cleaner. So it's just tiny issues like that, trying to find a way around it with the public and teaching them that this is how this business works. I think when people can put a face on the business, they become more, I don't want to use the word entitled, but they expect more, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, people online shop at Zara all the time. They never like, what if it doesn't fit me? Mm. You know, they online shop at any, even overseas, they online shop. And then they never like, but what if it doesn't fit me? But, you know, but all of a sudden now the business is owned by Pupo and I can put a face on the business. Then it's like, but what if it doesn't fit me?
Yeah.
So we're still trying to find synchrony with the public when it comes to the model of the business. Yeah. But it's going well. We just turned one. Very excited for that. And business teaches you so many things that being a business does not.
Very, very two different things. And I always say sometimes one of our guests earlier, Unozuko today, was speaking about how she thought because she is known and on television, if she puts out a product, like, it's just going to fly off. I'm like, that's not how it works. That's why we have so many even celebrity brands in the country that have failed over and over and over again, because slapping your name on something doesn't mean anything. Being CEO and running a business is tough work and requires a totally different mindset. It doesn't care who you are, where you're from, or what you're about. The grind is real and hard. And I've got no doubt that you guys are going to find a solution towards the model. And, you know, talking about how when people can put a face, then they expect more, or it's not even just expecting more, they become more demanding than they would to any other business. And it brings me to a conversation I was having with Mr. N over the weekend. It really was sparked by the Chidima thing that was happening and trending. And I'm like, yeah, what they did was wrong. Obviously, you shouldn't have any identity theft issues, et cetera, et cetera. Wrong. Yeah. However, I wanted to extend the conversation further in where I said to him, but the uproar started before none of us knew that there was fraud. Like, just knowing the name that the uproar started. And outside of that, I was like, that's what we find a lot even with women. Because my husband had asked me, why do women hate each other? Why don't you guys support each other? Like, where there's women, there's always like some pull down and whatever. And I said, it's crazy. You sometimes we hate what we can recognize because we hate ourselves, but we're not ready for that conversation. That's why it's easier for women to pull each other down, because you can identify more. That's why it's easier for Black people. If you look when we're trending globally, it's not even just a South African issue. It's always Black people fighting somewhere, somehow with each other.
Yeah.
We're fighting Americans today. Tomorrow it's Nigeria. But it's always around Blackness. I'm like, because we're told we're either, and we recognize because we're all the same skin color, and then we're like, but it's a much, much deeper conversation that needs a much longer longer discussion. And I find that it's the same even in business when you put your name, and I found it even in PR, where I'd advise my clients, just launch. You don't need to be the face at the moment. What we need is to increase sales. So we're going to do our PR and marketing just to increase sales and push sales, because that's the bottom line, right?
Yeah.
Later on, then we can introduce you, because there's that thing that happens.
Yeah.
And then when they feel like they've made you, even worse, like, oh, so manje, exactly. Said Dubai, I made you without me. Like, what do you mean you made me? Did you make SABC? Did you make, but you consume all of things, but
right.
You don't go around saying you made someone, you purchased and supported, and I'm grateful, but to say you made me, it's such an interesting space.
It is. I think maybe as people who come from previously
disadvantaged,
not necessarily disadvantaged, but oppressed, people who come from oppressed communities feel like there's only, they view things from a scarcity point of view. We always, you know how in the American culture, there was always the house Negro, the one Negro who's allowed to get inside the house. So because of that culture, we always think there can only be one woman in this seat. So I must fight to be the only woman in the seat, or there can only one black person here, or there can only be one queer person here. So I must fight to be the only queer person in here. But not only fight, but also shut down the doors for other queer people who might want to come and take my space. So it all comes down to viewing things from a scarcity point of view, because you think opportunities are limited. Yeah. You think the money is limited. You think the people are limited.
Yeah, for sure. One of the best things I've ever done for myself is to think and move from a place of abundance. Now, even this podcast, I started with nothing. Right? I'm like, yeah, we're doing a podcast. Do I have lights and cameras? You know how much a mic is? But abundance, we're going.
Right.
So what happened?
It's such a game changer. Even in your dating life, you start not holding on to people because you think, you know how when you are dating in your early 20s, you think, oh, because this person has done 1, 2, 3 or been 1, 2, 3 for me, I have to hold on to them even though they're no longer serving my purpose, because what if this never comes back again?
Gandhi, there's so much.
Gandhi, there's so much more.
So much more.
There's so much more.
Yo, Pupa, this has been such an incredible conversation. When we finish this podcast, we like to play what we call Fast Five. I ask you 5 quick questions. You answer in a word, sentence, or phrase, whichever way you choose. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Let's do this. I'm going to start very easy. When I introduced you, I said, Pupo Gumede K. For those who don't know, you're obsessed with the Kardashians. Why the obsession, and when did the obsession start?
So I started being obsessed with the Kardashians, well, when I was young. My sister introduced me to Keeping Up the Kardashians. And I just got so attached to Kim. And so attached. I remember we were at a garage this one time, and I read a headline, I was still a teenager, that they stopping Keeping Up the Kardashians, and I started crying at the garage. And my sister's like, oh no, it's just rumors. They're not doing that. They would never do that. And from then, as I grew older, I started studying Kim. Instead of just being fascinated by her, I started studying her and mimicking her ways and mimicking how she does her business, how she's built her brand. Anyone who's close to me will know that I actually maneuver my brand sort of very similar to how Kim maneuvered the Kim Kardashian brand. And yeah, man, I think it just grew from there. And also there is a term that I use now online, that ukimu. I don't know if you're familiar with that. And I remember someone once asked me, what does ukimu mean? Mm-hmm. And I said to them, it means the essence of who you are. There's no formula that makes Kim Kardashian Kim Kardashian. And I started applying that to myself. Mm-hmm. There's no formula that makes me, me. You can do everything that I've done. You can be given all the same opportunities that I've been given, but you will not come on the other side being me.
Yeah.
So the essence of who I am, there's no formula to it. The same way, so that is the way Ukimu comes from. Say, you can have a reality show, date a rapper, do what, but on the other side, you will not come out as Kim Kardashian, because the formula to what makes her is non-repeatable. Mm. Hence, the formula to break, you can't break her because you don't know what made her. You can't take away any element from her. And I started applying that to my life, say, there's nothing you can take away from my life and think, well, without this, let's see you shine.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what makes me you, me.
You. Yeah. Like they say, wonke umuntu uzalwe fumbethe, and you bring your own things to the world, no matter what. Like,
exactly.
you cannot repeat it. You can't transfer it. You can't. It's just for you. And who would you like to dress in the world? Like one person, like I would love to I feel like I know the answer.
I feel like we all know the answer. It's obviously Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also, you know, I would love to dress Lady Gaga.
And what kind of outfit would you put on Kim?
So I would love to dress Kim because of her influence, and it's just, it's a personal itch that I'd like to scratch, you know. But when it comes to Gaga, Gaga wears clothes, like she embodies fashion, she embodies the character of the clothes that she's in. You know, she reminds me so much of, not she reminds me of myself, I look at her and try and embody that to say, if I'm wearing this garment, then let me live the garment. Let me, you know, let me live the character. It's not just about the dress, but it's also about the character you get into when you're wearing that. And that just elevates the whole thing.
Oh, thank
you. So I'd find a way to match Gaga's freak.
Yeah, oh, that's beautiful. And if the world were to end and the only thing that remained was a book about your life, what would the title of the book be?
The Life of Poopo.
The Life of Poopo. Yes. And what would be in there? What would you hope people read in there?
It would be a tell-all. I'm a very closed-off person. I don't reveal. I hate vulnerability. I always say vulnerability is like bleeding next to a shark. And why would you do that? So many things that will go on in my mind, in my heart, in my life, people are never going to find out about. But I would write in that book. I would write my struggles and how I overcame, my internal struggles, my struggles that everyone witnessed, my struggles that people did not witness, my else, things that I would have done different, things that I wish I never did, things that I wish I did, and it would be a manual for a person, not just in styling or in fashion, but a person in growing would use to navigate growth.
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest things, or one of the things that I would write in bold is, people respect you the day you decide they should respect you.
Mm.
Because I came into this industry quite young, and again, disrespect has been such a reoccurring theme in my career. And I've always thought, maybe if I accumulate this amount of success, people will not disrespect me. Or if I achieve 1, 2, 3, people would not.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what I found out? I still achieve those things, and still people disrespecting me. I was on the cover of Forbes getting a door slammed at my face. So I discovered that actually people start respecting you the day you decide they should start respecting you. The day you decide that you don't get to disrespect me and still have access to me, that is the day you'll start respecting me moving forward. I wish I knew that earlier on. I would have dodged so many bullets if I knew that people just don't get to disrespect me and have access to me afterwards.
You teach people how you want them to treat you.
Exactly. Oh, I wish I would have known that at such a young age. Because I've always known that romantically. I've always been strict romantically. I've always taught people how to treat me.
Yeah.
I've always told people you only get one chance with me. I just wish I would have been as stricter even in my work. In my career,
yeah. And finally, if there's one event in the world that you're dying to go to, which one would it be?
The Met Gala.
The Met Gala. And that's possible. Like, we see our people every day.
Oh, I will.
So I've got no doubt.
I need this clip to play when I'm walking up the Met Gala stairs.
Yes,
please. I need this clip to play.
Yeah.
There's nothing that the life that I have now, I manifested all of this back when I was in high school. Whenever I bump into people I went to high school, they're like, oh my God, you really became the person you told everyone you would be. So when I speak of things like, oh, me attending the Met Gala, it's nothing that is far-fetched, or me marrying Tom Ford. It's nothing that is far-fetched. It will happen.
Are you doing what?
Oh, me marrying Tom Ford.
Nothing far-fetched. You heard it right here from the dreamer himself, Pupo Gomede K, the style icon. Thank you so very much for watching. And thank you to our studio partner, Photographers Galore. If you're looking to take incredible pictures, videos, or create any type of content, or maybe you want to have a podcast like I do, please reach out to them. The details are on your screens right now. And guess what? If you use the promo code on your screen, you'll get 15% off. Say thank you, Danko. Thank you so much for watching. I appreciate you. Until next week.